All right, welcome everybody to the Creators Table Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Watson. This is episode 14 with Caleb Bouchard. Okay, so Caleb holds an MFA from Georgia College and State University, and he is the author of A Satirist, a collection of prose poems, and 79 Nunnets. Okay, he lives outside Atlanta where he teaches college-level writing at Chattahoochee Technical College. And in fall of 2024, he started the Words in Circuit lecture series at Chat Tech, in which published authors come to campus to give readings and writing workshops. How are you doing today?
Great, Tyler. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. So why don't you give us like a brief rundown about yourself and what you do?
Sure. Well, I think kind of the main reason why you invited me on here is because I am a writer. That's kind of my, I don't know if you want to call it calling or mission or whatever. Yeah. But that's kind of the one of the big things that I identify as a writer. I write poetry, fiction, and a little bit of memoir. So I'm kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, I also teach English at Chattahoochee Technical College at the Woodstock campus.
Gotcha.
And I guess that those are kind of the two big things.
Yeah. Yeah. And for like the listeners, he was my English teacher. And so that's why I had him on, because I was like, you know what, this would be cool, you know. And I haven't had anybody who is, it's funny because I've had a lot of people who, I've had like people who do animations. I've had people who write like short film stuff, but I haven't had anybody who's a sole like writer. I haven't had anybody who's written any books or anything like that. So this is a little bit more variety for the listeners. So I think that'll be nice. Definitely.
Sure.
So, tell us about like, what was your first, what made you think that you were gonna, or what made you want to be like an English teacher, basically? What was that first kind of calling?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think, so I went to, as you said in the bio, I went to Georgia College and State University in Milledgeville to pursue a master's in creative writing. And at that time, even as I entered the program, I didn't see myself as a teacher. I had no interest in teaching. But part of the program is part of your funding package is that you have to teach like 1101 and 1102. So you're working as a teaching fellow. And it was during that process and those experiences that I thought, okay, like I'm not half bad at this. And so I just kind of pursued that. Even though writing kind of is the thing I think about first thing in the morning and last thing at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know it's like, so like, you know, like your dad kind of disciplining you, but like you have to do something to pay your bills, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So as much as I would love to, I don't even know if I would love to. It's not really realistic to live solely on my art and expect my art to pay the bills.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, at least to solely like kind of hop out of high school and like your first, you know, time is like just like going out there on your own to just solely rely on the fact that I just made a book and it's just going to immediately pay for everything, you know, like that would be a bit crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously you can still like have the possibility to, you know, have it be something in the future, right? Like you have that possibility where you can still, you can do two things at once, right? You can be an English teacher and you can still pursue your own passion projects, right?
Yeah. And I think the big thing that for a long time, why I was hesitant to think about being a teacher or go into teaching is because I felt like I didn't have the authority to like talk about literature in a serious way or English in a serious way. But I think if you see teaching as a collaborative experience, and you are learning alongside your students, then that kind of reframes it, and it kind of takes that sort of that anxiety or that pressure out of it.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, I think.
honestly,
No, go
if I
ahead.
could just add one more thing, I mean, I think it's important for writers to have something outside of writing going on in their life. You know, like I feel like if you're just writing from sun up to sundown, eventually you're just going to write about writing,
Yeah.
you know? And like,
Yeah.
honestly, how many people want to read about that? I mean, that's just,
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think I would want to. So teaching is a way to kind of mix things up and add some variety to life.
It maybe also gives you like more inspiration from especially the other writings you dive into, right? I mean, like if you're like kind of like you said, like from being in your class, it's definitely a class where you it's very discussion based, and I always like classes like that. I think it's a much better way to learn than just having somebody recite like a script to me, because at that point then I'm just taking information, like just trying to intake information. I'm not really learning it. I'm just getting it fed, like spoon fed to me, not even spoon fed to me, more like crammed. But I think that maybe that is another good thing that can come from this, is like just being able to hear all these new ideas on. Hear new takes on stuff that you are reading, basically, and maybe kind of open your eyes to something else. Like that would be, I think would be an enticing, as especially as an English teacher.
Yeah, and I mean it's especially at Chattahoochee Technical. I mean, obviously I love teaching here, but there is a lot of latitude and flexibility in what I can teach. It's basically a blank canvas here. And I mean, obviously we have standards, you know, we have things that we have to talk about, such as rhetoric and research and stuff like that. But in, you know, 1102, that English class you're in, I'm just kind of sharing stories that I find interesting and that inspire me. And I just kind of see it as a little book club, you know, where we can kind of nerd out
No.
about these poems and stories that are kind of maybe a little bit ambiguous, but I think that opens up a lot of opportunities for different perspectives and discussion.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I mean, I thought you're always a very fair grader too when it came to essays. 'Cause when I wrote essays, like I was never the best with my like grammatical correctness in any of the essays I wrote. But I always found that writing essays were never something I didn't enjoy. It was some, you know, for some classes you had to write an essay on something specific and you didn't have very much leeway. Then it wasn't, sometimes it could be hard to find the creativity in it. But then a lot of yours were very open-ended. And I think it was the personal narrative one. I really enjoyed that one. And then there's also another one in English 1101. It was, I forgot which one it was.
Rhetorical analysis.
Yes, that one. Yes, that one I enjoyed that one a lot too. They're all just very open-ended kind of essays because I think it encourages people to think on their own and I think do kind of and be inspired a lot more, I guess.
And you're mentioning that you know, you kind of struggled with or it wasn't like your strong suit in terms of grammar. And like that's something we talk about on the first day one syllabus day. Like in this class, we're focusing on content over cosmetics, you know, developing ideas, right? Making sure that those kind of key ingredients of writing are, you know, flavorful and strong, you know, before you kind of sprinkle on the salt and pepper, which is, frankly, like spell check and grammar and all that stuff. And that's something that, like, we're, you know, English teachers especially are talking a lot about with the advent of AI, ChatGPT, whatever,
Yeah.
like, how do we recognize if something is written by a human? And sometimes you'll feed a prompt into ChatGPT and it'll be grammatically flawless, no misspellings, like, it's very kind of polished academic writing, but there is no personality on the page. There is no heart.
Yeah.
And I think as English teachers, and frankly, as writers, just generally writers, are having to kind of reevaluate what makes strong writing. Like, is it the cosmetic things, like, making sure you don't have comma splices, or making
Yeah.
sure that everything is spelled right, or is it having an original argument? Is it like telling a life experience in a unique way that only you can tell it,
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm rambling.
No, I agree. I fully agree. Yeah, I think it's definitely something. AI is definitely something I think a lot about, because as there's been times where there's been times where I was like I had a blank on something I could do for like a video or something like that, and I was like, you know what, let's see what AI thinks. What were some random things that I could grab? Now, I think with AI, it's a very slippery slope, because I do think AI can be very useful even for helping coming up with ideas, but it can't be your idea was made by AI. I think it can be used to inspire ideas. So it's like if I asked AI, it was like, come up with like a song idea, right? Like I want some sort of vibe for a song I want to write or something like that. I'm not gonna do it like just make exactly what it tells me to make. I'm gonna take that idea and I'm gonna take my own spin on it, So being like, hey, AI, write me an essay, that's wrong. But because it's just not gonna have that flair to it, right? Especially if you're writing like a story and not a kind of more of a educational, I guess, essay, right? But even then, it might not even have a little bit as much substance, I guess. Might feel a little bit like kind of reprocessed, I guess, from somebody else. I think it's just we have to kind of decide like what's a good way of using AI and then what's just abuse of it,
And I mean, this is probably not the most, this might be a controversial thing for an English teacher to say, but sometimes the mistakes are, sometimes mistakes can be interesting, flaws can be interesting, or when not just a writer, but a painter or a musician, like when they take a risk and it doesn't really, it kind of backfires. That opens up an opportunity, because that's a very, not to like bring up that kind of icky word failure, but failure is a very human experience. And we learn from failure. We learn from, mistakes and sort of risks that don't pan out. So honestly, like I enjoy reading essays that are kind of a little rough around the edges, but that there's a pulse on the page.
So what is that? Maybe that dives us into our next topic, I guess. Have there been essays you've had to read in some of your classes that is it very easy to kind of grab an essay and then find those ones that you immediately are like, okay, this is actually pretty good, right? Is it very, because I know you probably have to read a lot of essays and you're probably doing a lot of grading, so is it one of those things where it's very easy for you to see those ones that stand out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ones that stand out are the ones that I'm able to cover up the corner of the page and say, oh, this is definitely Jessica, for example,
Yeah.
speaking to me right now. And it just, the strongest essays are the ones that feel like a conversation,
Yeah.
like I'm having a cup of coffee with the writer, and they're just telling me their thoughts about Cathedral by Raymond Carver, for example,
Yeah.
or, like a Dave Chappelle stand-up special that we watched in class. And, I mean, it's, yeah, it's, I think that those are the essays that stand out to me the most. And even the ones that, are a little bit critical of it, because in class, it's so easy for students to be like, oh, yes, this is a strong piece of rhetoric, or, Cathedral, or, Facing the Music by Larry Brown, those two short stories we look at. These are strong pieces of literature. Just kind of automatically assume that it's a great piece of writing or a great piece of rhetoric just because the teacher has assigned it.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's more interesting when you hear from a voice that is contradicting that, and it's like, well, what about this fallacy, or like, why didn't the writer do this? I like those essays as well that kind of take a more critical approach, even if I disagree with it.
Yeah, it's kind of like how, it's, I feel like that's kind of how we, that's kind of how progress works, I guess, is just by people with different opinions and they're expressing that, right? That's how the only th that's the only way things actually change is if you, I said this on my last one for some reason, and I don't remember why, but I said I like to consider myself a professional complainer, because there's plenty of things, like if you need somebody to complain about something, I'm here, and I can definitely do that. So it's kind of like being a complainer sometimes isn't too bad because, sometimes you need to be able to being able to just identify things that are off and speaking up about that and things that you disagree with and stuff like that. It's better for everybody. It allows everybody to be more creative.
Well, I mean, like, when you complain, it just shows that you're paying attention,
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
like you're thinking critically. I mean, not if you're complaining all the time, that can
Yeah.
be a little bit irritating
Yeah, of
to a
course.
certain point, but like, it just shows that you're absorbing the world around you, and like you have higher expectations,
Yeah, of course, yeah. I have
So yeah.
another kind of leading question. So do you have obviously you've had a lot of students like you've come across in your time of teaching. So is there have you had any of those students reach back out to you after a while and kind of like do you think you've inspired any writers to go and pursue that more and then them reach back out to you? Have you had anything like that happen?
Oh gosh, I've only been teaching for about 5 years. So, yeah, my first semester was fall of 2019, right before COVID.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I've kept in touch with a few students. Like, once I know that they're not going to ever take me again, like, I welcome them to follow me on Instagram and stay in touch.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I've stayed in touch with a handful of students. I think it's probably going to take some more time, though, if
Yeah,
I'm being
the
honest.
5 years, yeah, you know.
Because, like, honestly, it wasn't until like I was in my 20s when I was thinking about teaching full time myself that I started reaching back out to old teachers,
Yeah.
and kind of, picking their brain and asking for resources and trading notes on teaching and writing. But it's funny because like there are students who I've encountered and I'm just like, oh, you're probably going to be a teacher.
Oh,
You know,
yeah.
like
Yeah.
you're probably like, obviously I don't have a crystal ball, but I just have a feeling of like, you're probably going to write me in like 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And, great things are going to have happened, but you're
Yeah.
probably going to learn a lot about yourself in that time as well. And, either ask for a recommendation or ask for a meetup and kind of trade notes about writing or teaching. Like I just know it because they just remind me of myself. I mean, I was not the best student in high school, middle school, or college. Like I was like C's get degrees type approach. And I don't know, I feel like it's those kinds of students, ironically, who end up being teachers somehow. It's like they have to serve a life sentence, of like,
They gotta stay in the
like if
system.
you're, like you didn't apply yourself the first time around, so now you're gonna have to make a career out of, spending time. Like, I don't know, I just get a vibe from some students and they remind me of myself. And I mean, they're not the best test takers. Their essays are maybe a little rough and ready, but there's just something about it, like the way that they talk in class. I just know that there's something percolating under the surface, and I'm like, yeah, you're probably going to be a teacher, bro. Like,
Settle in,
anyway.
you're gonna be taking my podium in a bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
But
definitely get that.
yeah, that was, I don't know if that answered your question,
Oh no, it
but
definitely did. Yeah,
yeah.
I can definitely see how you just encounter so many people, and even though it's only been 5 years since you started teaching, you probably still encountered a lot and from all different walks of life, stuff like that. So it's an interesting role. You get to watch people at one stage in their life when they're deciding what they want to go do, and then
Right.
you see them in 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years from that point, and you see what they did, what they chose.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of my students are just kind of, they're probably like right now they're in their mid-20s, like they're still figuring it out, but I think in a few years, like once they've kind of settled down, not to use that cliched term, but like I've kind of settled down and start, thinking about careers, professions. I just have a feeling I'll probably hear more in the next few years, but not so much right now.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. You're still kind of impacting a lot of people, and see, and they'll come back. They'll come back soon,
Yeah.
probably.
Yeah.
So why don't we dive a little away from the teaching aspect of your life and kind of go towards more of your personal writing life. So you said you've written. Let me pull this back up. You said, did you? You've written your own book, correct? Or a
Yeah,
collection of prose poems. Okay, tell us about that. Tell us about The Satirist.
So that came about kind of at the tail end of the MFA graduate school, and I was just tired of writing like traditional, like 12-page stories or like poems, like traditional kind of free verse, contemporary type poems or like personal narratives. I wanted to mix it up and do something that was a little bit of a hybrid or even, like more surreal. And at the tail end of my MFA, I discovered this writer named James Tate. He put out a book called The Government Lake. And that book was kind of a mixture of poetry and prose. And it was just these like very daydreamy, surreal, just weird pieces that like you
Yeah.
didn't know. It's like you, honestly, you just didn't know what you're reading, you know, like, is this fantasy? Is this reality? And I just really like the risks that James Tate took with his writing, and it inspired me to try that form of prose poetry and just kind of really go out there into the weird, dark waters. And so, yeah, I wrote like, I don't know, I probably wrote like close to 200 prose poems. And
Wow,
then,
yeah.
I mean, like, most of them were crap, were like
No, well.
total unredeemable. Like, I would never show them to anyone. They'll never see the light of day, crap. But there was like a handful of them that I was like, okay, like I could do something with this. And I shaped it into a manuscript, and that's The Satirist.
Wow, yeah. That's It's kind of like and how long did this take you?
So I probably wrote my earliest prose poems maybe in like 2020. Because that's when I discovered James Tate, and for a while I was just like writing, like just cranking out like two or three prose poems a day, and submitting them to literary journals, and I did that for maybe like a year and a half, and then once I felt like I, you know, kind of hit critical mass, like I'm done generating, drafting, et cetera, I started editing and revising them, and that took another year, year and a half,
Yeah.
and I released it on like the day my the day before my son was born is
Oh,
when
wow.
I released it. Yeah, and it was not planned that way.
Huh.
But yeah, I went the DIY route and self-published it on Amazon.
Yeah.
So yeah, about 3 years, all
That's
told.
awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. To have it, oh, to have it like I like these long projects. It's something where it almost kind of like I don't know if I could. Like a lot of the projects that I've done over the years, like it's one of those things where I was able to get it done within 3 months, but they're very small things. 'Cause I'm impatient, you know? Like when I have an idea, like I have the idea of the finished product in my head. And I'm so ready to get to like make that happen. So when I hear like about these like 2, 3 year long projects, it's like it's really cool because I think you just take your time and you just keep working on it. And it's cool to see how a lot of these things develop over time.
Well, I
So,
think the thing that was
oh, go ahead.
useful with this. Sorry, I think the thing that was useful with The Satirist is that it wasn't like I wasn't. It is a big project, but it's made up of a lot of small parts. It's like 50 or 60 pieces in there, and so it just felt like a bunch of like tiny little tasks
Yeah.
that built up to a bigger thing. So that helped me get through it, was like, you know, when you write a novel, like you are living with those same characters in that same world and that same kind of plot line for years and years. And I could not do that. That
Yeah.
sounds really grueling and really boring and tedious.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
yeah, it's just a little bit different when you do have like, and this is something I tell students, whenever you're able to like take a big task and break it down into smaller tasks, that's always a good move. So that's
Yeah.
all.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's just very impressive to see how people can set aside so much of their time, you know, and just and be okay with And be patient, you know. Patience is something I've had to learn through pretty much everything that I've worked on. You could ask my parents and they would tell you that's the one thing. Like, I remember one time I was working on, I was making a guitar and I was trying to figure out, I had an idea for this guitar, right? And so I started working on it, and I remember one time I was just so like, because I get to where if I have an idea and I think about it that night, then my night's ruined. Like, I can't think of anything else. It's like it's like an itch, you know? It's like I gotta go. So I'm like, 10 o'clock at night, I'm in there like, okay, let's get this done, you know? Which has been good, you know, whenever I started making them for people, it made it to where like I'd have it done in like a few weeks, you know. But I think it was just because I was just really, really looking. I hated the in-between process, I guess, you know. But I rushed things every now and then and it screwed things up. But you know, being able to be patient is a huge, huge thing. So I
Yeah, for
gotta
sure.
oh, go ahead.
Oh no. That was it.
Oh, okay. Well, I was gonna ask, so have you met any interesting people around writing over the years?
Yeah, for sure. I think the most recognizable person would be David Sedaris. I don't know if you did take 1101 with me,
Yes,
right?
I did, yeah.
And so Sedaris, you'll remember, he wrote the personal narrative essay Us and Them.
Yes, I remember that, yeah.
And which we read in class and we discussed, kind of preparing for the personal narrative assignment. And so he and I are pen pals, and we've known each other for a long, long time. I first read his books when I was like 12 or 13 years old, and I never read anything like that. Like when you're a kid, you just read like Goosebumps or Harry Potter, fantasy and just like really colorful, imaginative, like fictional things.
Yeah, of course.
But Sedaris really rocked my world because he was just writing about his own life and, his childhood, or like living in New York or London or Paris, traveling. And I was like just as entertained and enraptured with his writing about real life and the real world as I was with like freaking Harry Potter or Goosebumps, And so I was like, how does he do this? How does he create this magic on the page? And so I tried writing my own personal narrative essays. And I mean, like, imagine like a 12-year-old or 13-year-old like writing about like what have you experienced, But I tried writing in his style, and I sent him a letter. And I sent him one of my essays, and he was generous enough and kind enough to write back and give me some feedback on the essay. And so yeah, we've just been going back and forth since then, and he's been very supportive, and he I don't know if you know, but he goes on like reading tours like every spring and every fall. We'll go like on national tours. Like he performs at the Fox in Atlanta like at least once a year, and he's invited me to come out and open up the show a few times, and so that's been a really like amazing
Yeah,
experience.
that would be awesome. Yeah, just first off, going to the Fox Theater to perform anything, I think would just be a legendary experience, to be honest. And all these old theaters around the country, that'd be awesome. Totally
For
awesome.
sure.
But it's really cool that I didn't know that was how you got in contact with him. It kind of, I guess, shows a lot about his character. Because, I mean, just the fact that you're able to just, shoot somebody a letter who you kind of looked up to, and then there's like just respond. And then
Yeah.
a few years later, you're opening some of his shows. I mean, that's pretty crazy coincidence.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, and he's just like very, he spends a lot of time with his readers. You know, he's very generous with his time. Like if you go to a Sedaris show, he's always signing books after.
Yeah.
And he'll spend a few minutes with each person. And people in the line complain because his lines can go on for, 5 or 6 hours because he's like you said, he's very patient with people, and very generous. And he wants to create a memorable moment with everyone who comes to one of his shows, which is like not the norm
No,
whatsoever with
it's not.
book
No.
signings or concerts. Like he's very grounded and connected with his readers.
Yeah, my dad's big on sports autographs and stuff like that, and from going from those things and stuff like that, like I've gone for some reason I've just gone through all these like autograph signing lines and stuff like that. And I remember one time there was a cartoonist, and he was a voice actor for a cartoon called Courage the Cowardly Dog. I don't know if you've even heard of that.
Yeah.
Have you heard of
Was he the dog?
that? Yeah, he was the dog, yeah.
Oh man, dude, I love that show.
And so
Well, I
he was
don't
at
remember. Yeah.
Atlanta Comic Con in at the George Ward
Oh,
Congress
cool.
Center. And I went to get in his line because there was like two people, and I'm like, oh, this will take only a second. I'll just go and I'll say hi. It probably took me like 40 minutes in that line because he sat there and talked with the dude for like 20 to 15 minutes for each person. And it finally got to me, and he came over and hugged like my entire family.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy. And whenever you have people like that who really take the time, which he only had three people in his line to be fair, so it's like I kind of hope you would. But it's really special when it's really special when somebody like that takes the time to recognize and really connect with those type of people.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think it really shows a lot about them, and that they're not really, not to say like anybody who does just kind of pass people through their line, it's not to say anything against them necessarily, but I would say it shows kind of like how you're more just appreciative of the fact that people are appreciating what you make, like your arts, right? Rather
Right.
than, the actual just the success of it, It's like it's not the number of people who enjoy your work, it's the people who enjoy your work and why.
Exactly.
So I got a question a little bit more off the path a little bit. It's a little I implemented this one recently. What is a piece of media that you unapologetically enjoy that might shock others, aka a guilty pleasure, if you have one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would not call this a guilty pleasure because I do not feel guilty about it whatsoever. I mean,
That's fair.
if you look at my Instagram, I am not like shy about it. But my girlfriend and I are huge fans of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, yeah.
And
I gotcha.
yeah, and like we are, and it's again going back to the pandemic, we started watching it in 2020 during lockdown, and we just devoured like all the seasons, a lot of the offshoots, and like started going to like drag shows, drag brunches. Like
Wow, awesome.
I'm a big fan of like anything drag related. I'm obsessed with, yeah.
Yeah,
So.
no, that's definitely all of my answers have been very like a lot of people just didn't really have one, but I like the people who was like, it's not necessarily something that you need to feel guilty about. Like you don't necessarily feel guilty about it. Like some people are like, I really like ketchup, right? You can be happy that you like ketchup, It's just maybe something that
Right.
people might not expect. And that, yeah, I definitely I definitely get that for sure. And honestly, COVID was just an eye-opening time for everybody. I feel like everybody discovered all different things that they liked and were interested in COVID. Like that was a turning point for a lot of people's creative mind, I guess.
Right.
So what are like some has there been any like pieces of media or art that have it kind of sounds like you might have slightly answered this one already, but pieces of media or art that have kind of inspired you over the years, whether it be as a child or as a teacher, any of the above?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think Sidaris and his books, like, I would say that they were probably the most revolutionary for me. Just because, and I would have, discovered him eventually. If I had not discovered him as a teenager, I would have read him in college because he's taught a ton in high schools and colleges. But I don't know, the timing of my discovery was super, was just very meaningful because he was just one of those writers who gave me permission, to write about myself and to try to find the extraordinary in the ordinary, and not to try too hard to make things more interesting than they were. Like every moment of every day has the potential to be like a fantastic, funny, exhilarating moment. It's just really about your perspective. So yeah, I mean, I would say Sidaris was probably the most influential during middle school, high school. I mean, I read a ton. I read a lot more then than I read now, honestly. In high school, I was really impacted by Henry Rollins, who was the lead singer of Black Flag. And even more than the music, like even more than punk, I was really into punk during that time. But even more than the actual music, I really enjoyed his books. Like me, he self-publishes like all of his books. He has his own book company, 1361, and he publishes, well, not so much now, but when he was touring with Black Flag and later with his other band, Rollins Band, he would keep these tour journals and, like touring all around the world, US, like name a continent, he's been there.
I got
And
you.
it was just really fascinating to like read those kind of just like those very like intimate journals of him like on the tour bus, after the show, like sweating and just exhausted, or just kind of exploring a city, like London or Bangkok or whatever, just hearing his sort of off the beaten path observations about different countries, different cities. So I would say if I had to boil it down to two writers, Sidaris and Rollins are probably the most influential.
Yeah, no, I think it sounds like these have been two like I probably could have it seems like you also expressed that in your class, 'cause I probably would have we it's very you learn that when we take your 1101 class for sure. Which is good though, I think you should like share what has inspired you with the people who you're teaching for sure. So I guess that would kind of I'm gonna kind of bundle my last question because I feel like this would maybe kind of help you answer. What are some difficulties you have ran into, and how would you give somebody advice to get through them who are also going through those same difficulties?
Sure, yeah. In terms of writing, you mean?
Yeah, and in terms of writing, like what are some difficulties you ran into, and what advice would you give to people going through that same situation?
For sure. I would say with writing specifically, the biggest sort of challenge or adjustment that I experienced was having a kid. In graduate school, if it's a good program, they're going to expect you to write a lot, and if you love writing, you won't mind that. Writing is going to be your primary focus, your primary job, and getting better as a writer. So I went from an environment where writing was number one. Everyone around me was writing. I went to writing workshops. I went to readings. I read a ton. It was like my entire world for a few years. So I went from that environment to very shortly after grad school, within a couple years, I had a kid. And, when you're staying up at all hours of the day or night, and you have to deal with a puking, crying, sickly little kid, at 2 o'clock in the morning, suddenly it doesn't feel so important the next day to wake up and like write a prose poem, so that was a big adjustment, and it was the first time that like writing was not the main star in my life, like my guiding star. I think when you have a kid, like there's just a lot of like it reprograms your brain, and you realize that there's a lot of noise in everyday life, from people, from lots of different things. And so you have to like rebuild your life, basically. I know that sounds dramatic, but like you do become a different person, and you do have to rebuild and reschedule your priorities. And so at that time, I was not really interested in writing creative stuff, but I still wanted and needed to write. So I shifted writing like creative stuff to more documentary writing. So I kept a journal during my son's first year of his life. And so that's how I stayed in touch with writing, was just kind of at the end of the day, just get a few hundred words down, like, here's what happens, what happened today. Here's how I'm feeling about it. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. And so that's my current project right now, is revising those journals and getting them ready to publish in a book form later this year.
That'd be awesome.
Advice? I don't know. It's really exciting. And this is something I've been working on for almost 3 years, I guess, at this point, similar to The Satirist. But in terms of advice, I don't know. I don't know if there is any advice there, but like, I think a theme of this conversation has been patience. But also, like being giving yourself grace, and understanding that, life has up and downs. You're going to go through different seasons of your life where, whether you're a writer or, building guitars or a painter or any kind of artist, there are going to be kind of dry spells. And that's just a part of life. And hopefully those times that you spend away from your craft, your art, whatever, hopefully those times will kind of help inspire you when you come back to it. And you'll feel, I think it's good to take breaks. Whether it's an essay you write for school or whether it's, a novel that you're working on or like an album you're trying to record, I think it's good to take breaks. And yeah, kind of be patient with the chaos of the creative process and the chaos of life, is really helpful as well. I'm meandering, but I think that's the closest I'll get to giving advice.
Yeah, no, I think, it's you don't always have to have a very, I hear a lot of advice. I've had a lot of people give different advice, and I think it's more of where it's coming from and not what that advice is that's significant, because it's I'm sure I have plenty of people who are writers in some form, whether it be on making books or making animations or movies, I've had a lot of people like that on, and I'm sure they would very much appreciate this kind of advice. I'm sure they'll probably get a lot from this, and me as well. I definitely think that I definitely think this has definitely been a very interesting episode, and I'm glad I had you on. Thank you definitely for joining, because I think I really enjoyed your class. I always enjoyed coming into class. One of the few classes I had most of those semesters that I actually was like, okay, this is not that bad. I get to finish my day off with this, and then I get to go home. That's not bad, So yeah, thank you again for being on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for the invite, and I'm glad that you got something out of the class and that it wasn't, a completely miserable experience. It's really nice to hear that, like, you actually looked forward to class. Yeah. So,
I have
yeah,
friends who definitely
again.
agree.
Yeah, well, thanks for the invite. I don't get a lot of these like invitations, so
Oh yeah.
it was really cool to talk to you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Well, thank you again for being on. I really appreciate it. And thank you to the listeners who are tuning in. And if you're looking to find any of Caleb's links, whether it be to his book or to his Instagram, the links will be in the description of this video. And definitely go get one of those copies of that book. I'm sure he will definitely appreciate it. And that's what it's for. We're spreading the word. And I hope that everybody listening has a great rest of your day. And thank you. Goodbye.